Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is a Win Tracy recording, and it is 10:25 a.m. and that is on July 4th. And happy Independence Day to all of our U.S. subscribers, and congratulations to all of our U.K. subscribers. And that was a thrilling match that we had yesterday. I took the opportunity when there was when we had the extra time to record the audio yesterday, so I was able to catch the penalty shootout, and that was truly a nail-biting event. So lots of fun in the UK for the World Cup. But at the risk of sounding like a broken record, I really do think that what's going on in China right now is important. It's something we have to pay attention to, because the simple fact of the matter is that credit conditions are getting tighter. And that's not a situation that is individual to any one country, but it's a global phenomenon. And when we look at the deterioration that we've seen in the Shanghai A shares this year, well, the index has pulled back from 38 to 2800, so 1,000 points on an index of less than 4,000 points is a substantial pullback. And when we look at it on a weekly basis, we can see just how inconsistent the trend has been. It has been prone to these very choppy moves, where you've had surges and declines in almost equal measure. And this is a very significant deterioration, where the index is now approximating the lows we saw at the beginning of 2016. There is a short-term oversold condition, but it is going to have to demonstrate in pretty robust order that demand is returning to dominance. And that would require a clear upward dynamic. Well, it's feeding through into things like commodities. For example, the copper price has now broken down. Now, it's been down for 4 consecutive weeks and on consecutive days as well. So it has broken its progression of higher reaction lows. It has broken downwards from the most recent range. Each one of these ranges over the last 2.5 years has been one above another. The price got right up to the peak 4 weeks ago and failed at the upper side of that range, and now it has come straight back down and broken lower. So at the very minimum, then this is a really rather significant trend deterioration. And is there the prospect of some steadying? Well, yes, there is some prospect of steadying, but it has got a lot of work to do if we're going to be talking about the prospect of recovery from this position. It has to at least sustain a move back above $3. And copper is often regarded as Dr. Copper, because it's an industrial resource that is used in every country in the world. And the fact that it is coming lower, well, is a reflection of what's going on in China more than anywhere else, because China is far and away the largest consumer. Then when we turn back towards China, the banking sector was in negative territory in here today. Now, it wasn't down in a dynamic manner, but neither has it been up in a dynamic manner. It is coming back down towards the lows that we saw in early 2016 and 2015. But again, this 12,000 area is a potential area of support until we have confirmation of a clear upper dynamic to suggest that anyone other than ourselves are looking at this and thinking that it might be an area of support. There is an additional fact, and it is that I'm not going to even attempt to pronounce the name correctly. China's new central banker has only been in the job for 3 months. Well, I guess we're coming up on 4 months. And Jerome Powell has been in the job for about 6 months. So we have two new people at the helm of the world's, two of the world's most important central banks. So it really would be handy to know that they know what they're doing, and we don't have confirmation of that. Most particularly, what the market will want to see is that they're willing to step in and support the market. Well, yesterday we had the People's Bank of China stepping in and jawboning the market higher. But then you had some comments in here today saying that they were reasonably sanguine about a weaker currency. They just didn't want to see it surging lower all at once. Well, that suggests that we're going to get some pause, but that this trend of underperformance by the renminbi is not over. And if that is indeed the case, that's going to have a knock-on effect for emerging markets generally. The Asia Dollar Index has also broken rather substantially lower. And it is oversold in the short term, so there is potential for some pause and consolidation. If we look at some of the individual currencies, for example, the Indonesian rupiah is coming back towards the lows that it saw back in 2015. But so far, there hasn't been anything in the way of a clear upward dynamic or a downward dynamic by the dollar to suggest that this is anything other than a pause. And Indonesia, despite the fact that it is both a commodity producer, a commodity exporter, has a large young population and a growing middle class, well, it also is dependent on China for trade. China is a significant center of gravity economically for the Asian region, and what we can see from the banking sector and from the commodity sector is that China is seeing some tightening going on, and that's not so much in terms of interest rates that are racing higher, but rather that we're in a situation where they're trying to clamp down on speculation in the property sector and in the shadow banking sector. Now, that's having a particular effect, not so much on the very large banks, because the very large banks are essentially arms of the government, and they pretty much all approximate the pattern that we have on the H-share index in Hong Kong. But when, for example, we look at some of the other, or what might be considered non-systemically important banks, well, then, for example, Cinda Asset Management is a company that was set up to manage bad loans in the last bad loan crisis. That was the crisis all the way back in the 90s, before China had devalued their currency substantially in I think 1994. And they've been holding those assets for a long time. Well, now, if we look at the valuations, there's an estimated PE of 3, and it's got a yield of 7, but it's now coming down in a very rapid manner. Well, what that has to at least give us some consideration of is that there is potentially here people that are really worried about bad loans, and that the default rate in China is an unknowable. This is one of the considerations that we have to take into account when you think about an underdeveloped bond market. We can look historically at the corporate bond market in Europe or in the US, and we can come up with what the default rate is. That in times of stress, it's one figure; in times of ease, it's another. And we can make at least some kind of or draw some kind of conclusion about what to expect from the natural default rate. We simply cannot do that in China because we don't have the history, and just there haven't been any defaults because everything had a backstop by the government. Well, now that you have defaults, we don't know what the default rate is, and that's a massive uncertainty. And that is why some of these, not only these asset management companies, but then, for example, you also have some of the brokers. And a significant number of the brokers are underperforming in a really significant manner. For example, CITIC Securities, having spent the last nearly 3 years ranging, it looked really positive. It was breaking higher in January and failed, and now it's right back at the lower side of its range and doing so in a dynamic manner. It's on the low of the week in here right now. This is a really substantial underperformance by the financial sector in China. And it has the potential to have a knock-on effect elsewhere because China is such a large economy. So we're already starting to see that in the commodities sector. And there is the potential that it is going to have a knock-on effect elsewhere because we also know that there's some selling going on ahead of the imposition of US tariffs. That's a big uncertainty, and the Chinese are not going to announce their tariffs until they see what the US in fact introduces. But then there's the likelihood that there's going to be a tit for tat. And that represents an uncertainty as well. So, for example, copper has broken down and soybeans are accelerating lower. Now, there is the potential that we are going to get a sell the rumor, buy the news kind of situation, that there is a lot of panic going on right now because people just do not know what the actual outcome of these tariffs is going to be. There's a lot of speculation about it, what it might be, but then there is a lot of selling pressure right now. There is the potential that once it has, in fact, become old news rather than new news, that people will think that enough of bad news has already been priced in. So we are at a rather interesting period of time right now because there are a significant number of short-term oversold conditions right now. Well, when we look at what's going on in Europe, it's perhaps instructive to look at a number of the individual indices. The DAX index was a little bit weaker in here today, but generally steady and has been ranging in approximately a 300 to 400 point range for the last week or two. It has been pausing above this 12,000 level now for more than a year, and that 12,000 level represents a key area of potential support. So it really does need to continue to hold above it. Now the CAC index in France has got more of an upward bias to trading, and it has more of those luxury goods companies which have been among the better performers this year, although a significant number of them are now beginning to pull back and are at least in mean reversion type pullbacks. Then when we think about what's going on in Italy, well, the reality is we have a new populist government, and so far they've focused on immigration. They have not so far made a big fuss about the fiscal situation, although there was news today that they're asking for more time to sort out their bad loans problem. But the reality is that Italy has got an enormous amount of debt that is due to be refinanced this year. So they are rather constrained in what they can do because they have got so much debt that needs to be refinanced. And the yield is unlikely to come back down below 2% simply because of the uncertainty around a new populist administration. But it would require a deterioration in relations with the EU to really suggest that we're going to push through the 3.5% level. And certainly when we look at the longer-term chart, the fact that yields have sustained the break up out of the 3-year base does suggest that there is going to be some pressure later, and really it would be a sustained move back below the trend mean would be required to contain that risk. But in the short term, this is not an urgent issue right now. Then in the UK, the FTSE 100 is quite heavily weighted by both energy and mining companies. And then in addition to that, you have the fact that HSBC is the largest weighting, and HSBC has got substantial Chinese operations. So what happens with the oil price is going to have a bearing on what happens with the FTSE 100. And oil today was a little bit steadier. It is right in the region of this $80 area. And so far, this looks like nothing more than a consolidation. Certainly, nothing in the way of downward dynamics have been seen in the last week. And this continues to look like a generally bullish environment. Well, when we look at a share, for example, like Royal Dutch Shell, that it has been able to hold this move above the 2600 point level so far. Now, there is still potential for some pause and consolidation, considering that there is a rather wide overextension relative to the trend mean. But as long as it's holding that upward bias, then I think we can continue to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. It would really require substantially lower prices on the energy complex to question the consistency of the trend and to put some of the better performing energy shares under pressure. That would then I think would be required to have a knock-on effect for the FTSE 100. BP had been ranging mostly below the 525 P level for much of the last 7 years, but it broke upwards in, I think it was April, and now this looks like a first step above the base. So the energy sector is returning to outperformance, not just in the US, but also in Europe, and it is being driven higher by these oil prices. Now, there are, I think, a number of points that need to, I think, be drawn out. The first is that the yield curve spread is at 30 basis points, and it is now pulling back in a rather sharp manner. So that tells us that credit conditions are tightening. Then we also had the fact that yesterday high yield spreads in the USA pushed on to new recovery highs, and that European high yield spreads have also been trending higher now for the last few months, in fact, since the end of last year. That also tells us that credit conditions are underperforming. Well, we've already seen the Chinese banking sector, but the European banking sector continues to underperform. There has been nothing really in the way of clear upward dynamics, certainly nothing like what the kind of moves that we saw at the lows in 2016. So, yes, there is potential for some unwinding of the short-term oversold condition, but the problems in the European banking sector are not going to evaporate. Then, when we look at the S&P 500 banks index, it is at the lower side of its range and was at a new closing low yesterday. This is an index that, if it fails at this level, well, then we're going to be talking about the same kind of trend deterioration that we see in a significant number of other banking sectors. So these are important because the commonality that we have in the global banking index or the global banking sector is also representative of tightening credit conditions. Then, if we look at the total assets of central banks, then we're also presented with the same conclusion that you have tightening credit conditions. This is the biggest pullback on global central bank balance sheets we've seen since at least the beginning of 2009. So this is meaningful. And if we're looking for a clear reason for the more difficult environment that we have in stocks, the more choppy, rangy environment, the fact that the breadth of the market has deteriorated, well, we don't have to look particularly far. And with high yield starting to come under pressure, then that is going to throw focus onto some of the most heavily leveraged companies. And the share that so many people love to hate is Tesla. And Tesla has pulled back in a very dynamic manner this week. And there is the potential that it is close to reaching its 200,000th car, in which case new buyers will lose their $7,500 credit. And that's a headwind for the share as well. And that's in addition to all the other challenges that it has. But the best time to own Tesla was in 2013. And since then, it has had, well, it has been an incredibly choppy environment. So when we look at a chart pattern and it becomes more difficult and more that one is more relying on luck than the consistency of the trend to make money, well, then we really have to ask the question, is it worth being there at all? I think that is the one of the big takeaways that you get from looking at a chart pattern like Tesla. Then what this also suggests is that when we look at the trend on Wall Street, that it has continued to represent relative strength and it has been outperforming. And the S&P 500 has so far been able to hold its progression of higher reaction lows, and it is now engaged in a reversion back towards the mean, but As long as it is holding the progression of higher reaction lows, then we can continue to conclude that this is a support building phase. And it would really require a sustained move below 2500 to suggest that we have a top in place. And that suggests that the index has plenty of room in which to consolidate. Then we can also think about what's going on with the NASDAQ. And it continues to hold this 7,000 level. Well, if it holds the 7,000 level, that is going to be the best of all possible worlds. And we don't often get the best of all possible worlds. So, but I think we can look at the index and say, well, it has had a failed upside break, and then it had another where it moved up to new highs and has so far pulled back to that 7,000 level. I'd be reluctant to say it has failed unless it were sustaining a move below the 7,000 level. And one thing that we talk about at the chart seminar, and it is how a type 2 top evolves. And a type 2 top is often represented by a loss of momentum following a particularly consistent period. And then you get a somewhat larger reaction. Type 2 tops are often, you often see failed upside breaks. When you get failed upside breaks, it tells us in terms of supply and demand that there is a surfeit of supply above the market and that the vacuum of supply has not formed, and that you still have the progression of higher reaction lows. But what do people do when something has been going sideways for longer, and when the range has become somewhat larger than they are used to? They start to raise their stops, and they start to raise their stops up behind the most successive higher reaction lows. So we would have to start to consider that with the NASDAQ, that there is a significant number of stops around this 6,300 to 6,400 point level. And if the price comes back down and finds support in the region of the trend mean and then bounces again, well, then we'd have to consider that the stops would probably get moved up again. And that narrowing of the tolerance of investors to accept a loss in a market that has a broadening pattern sets up the conditions that you could get a vacuum of demand below the market, and that you get a massive reaction against the prevailing trend. That's a potential outcome. That's almost exactly what we had back here in 2015. And the real hallmark of that failed type 2 top was that it bounced very emphatically and then made a higher reaction low later. Well, the market has gone up an awful lot since then, and this is a broadening pattern. So if it's still just a medium-term consolidation, well then, the region of the trend mean will hold, and it will continue to move higher. And if it fails and we get a massive reaction against the prevailing trend, well then, that will answer rather, or I think ask rather big questions about the consistency of the environment, but most particularly because we are now in an environment where credit conditions are tightening. Well, if credit conditions are tightening, particularly out there on the high yield sector, well, then we also should be keeping an eye on what's going on with US Treasuries. Well, US Treasuries have pulled back from the 3% level, and they are unwinding at that overextension relative to the trend mean. Well, if Treasuries are pulling back below the trend mean, then that suggests that people are buying them, and that if they're aggressively buying Treasuries when they know that there is a great deal of additional new supply coming into the market, it's because they are thinking about a safe haven rather than any other particular factor. Well, gold prices have begun to bounce, and they're really oversold in the short term, and they are back in the region of the December low. So they need to do that in a more dynamic manner to really confirm that we have a low of more than short-term significance. But if yields do come down, then that will reduce the headwind that gold has from rising yields. So that's certainly one potential outcome. Then we also have to consider that what is going to be the institutional response. There are really three big themes that are going on in terms of monetary policy right now. Well, the first, of course, is that the Federal Reserve anticipates that it's going to raise rates twice more this year. Well, the stock market is beginning to send messages, and the credit markets are beginning to send messages that that's not such a great idea. So the possibility that that may not in fact occur has would suggest that that could also act as a tailwind for gold. Well, if the if that does occur, then the dollar's rally could also run into some trouble, and that would allow some of the really rather deep oversold conditions on particularly emerging market currencies to be unwound. Then you also have the ECB, which is talking about stopping its quantitative easing purchasing program in September. Well, I think there's a fair argument that there's a good part of the European economy is just not ready for that, and not least because of the uncertainties that you have, and that the fact that high yield spreads are already rising and have been going up already for 6 months in Europe. That suggests that credit markets are already tightening in anticipation of the ECB stopping purchasing. Then you have what's going on in China, and China may have to loosen. They may have to adopt some sort of stimulus situation to stabilize the banking sector. So considering that the central bank balance sheets have had their biggest pullback since at least 2009, this is where central banks would be advised to act if they want to avoid a more deleterious event. That may require some additional selling pressure, and most particularly in China. When we think about what is leading on the downside, well, China is leading on the downside. And it is anything that is related to China is leading on the downside. So let's just simply not try to overthink it. Where is the epicenter of risk right now? It's in China. China is the epicenter of risk. And what that suggests is that it is in China that we need to see some substantial evidence that the central bank is willing to step in and try and manage what is an evolving situation. So I think that is where we need to think about where the risks are. And from a perspective of an Australian investor, the reasonable we've had an inverse correlation between the stock market and the Australian dollar. So the Aussie dollar was a little bit steadier today, so we had a little bit of a weaker environment on the ASX 200. So far, it has continued to hold this move above the 6,000 level, and it really does need to hold the breakout. The financials index is also right in the region of the trend mean, and it was a little softer in here today. So it does need to sustain a move up and above that trend mean to really confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment beyond what has been a very impressive rally over the last few weeks. And then if we think about what's going on in the resources sector, well, the Australian resources sector has been flattered by the weakness of the Aussie dollar, but even there, there does look like some risk that that overextension relative to the trend mean will be unwound. The big question with regard to China is capital flight. And China will be able to manage its problems if it can avoid capital flight. They have sufficient government or central bank resources and a large pool of domestic deposits that can handle their bad loans problem, but only if they can avoid capital flight. They seem to believe, or and this could be hubris, that they can do that, but that's a big question. And Bitcoin does look like it has found at least short-term support. And it was a very useful vehicle for moving money outside China in years past. And the fact that it is now bouncing does suggest that potentially it could be used as a vehicle for doing just that once more. So I think that there are risks that are evolving. This is a situation that requires monitoring, and that the consistency of trends is something that we really have to pay particular attention to at the current moment. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I wish all the best to all of you.